This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes Sinclair. Welcome to the show.
Everyone, today's guest is someone who lives and breathes leadership, not just as a concept, but as a daily discipline. Ryan Hawk is a leadership expert and the host of the Learning Leader Show, a podcast that logged over 650, that's right, 650 episodes, with some of the world's greatest minds in business, sports, and personal development. But Ryan's journey didn't start in the boardroom. It began on the football field. He earned a college scholarship to play quarterback at Miami University and went on to finish his career as Ohio University's quarterback and team captain. After football, he entered corporate America and spent 12 years rising through the ranks, ultimately becoming vice president of sales at a multi-billion dollar company. That experience laid the foundation for what became the Learning Leader platform, a blend of podcasting, leadership circles, and keynote speaking, all centered around one clear mission: helping people become more effective, thoughtful, and sustainable leaders. And as if that wasn't enough, Ryan is also the author of three powerful books. I have them here with me right now: The Score That Matters, Welcome to Management, and The Pursuit of Excellence, which is my personal favorite. Each one is packed with insight of his years of learning from top performers and putting them all into practice. And today is a special one because Ryan first joined me on the show on episode 12 on the Partnership Playbook. This is now episode 130. And my friend, it is great to see you back.
Thank you for having me back, Phil. It's always good to talk to you. I appreciate all of our correspondence in between. Probably too much time in between, but hey, I'm good. I'm glad to be with you, man.
So good. But look, we're gonna have a slightly different conversation today. We're gonna be talking a little bit around how you have built out the business that you have. It is sustained, as we just talked about, top of the call, for such a great amount of time, and we are sort of in a similar environment where we're helping leaders do really fantastic stuff. Let's start sort of semi at the beginning. You went from, you know, leading huddles on the football pitch to selling to leading organizations and speaking to world-class performers. And if I just rattled off some of those names, they would instantly be recognizable for our audience. But what was the turning point when you realized that leadership off the field was your next calling?
I'm not 100% sure then. I just know that I understood the transformative effect that leaders can have on others when I was in ninth grade and met the legendary Bob Gregg and Ron Ullery, which you and I have probably talked about before. I felt their expectations of me were far higher than I had of myself, which is kind of embarrassing to admit, but is true. And that is a powerful, magical feeling, and it's something I then wanted to do for others. Originally, I thought I would be a football coach, just like them, because that's what they did for me, and I thought, oh, I should go do that. But as I progressed within my playing career, I realized I'd like to do it maybe on a bigger scale eventually, and to do that outside of sports and just do it within business. So, yeah, I got promoted for the first time after being an achieving sales professional at LexisNexis, and then I became a manager of my own team, and I went back to school to get my MBA, and I started learning a little bit more about business. But I also realized that leading, like in a huddle as a quarterback, and leading in a corporate environment, there's a lot of things that were just different that I just was not very good at, and I had a lot to learn. So I was lucky to have some mentors, but I wanted to create a form of a leadership PhD program for myself, so I could be better at my job, because I was really struggling. And that's eventually, you know, what the Learning Leader Show, my podcast, became, was that personal leadership PhD program for myself.
It's really something. Can we just double click on something I wasn't aware of before, and our research didn't bring this up? When you get promoted to lead your own team, which you were formerly part of, that is almost an impossible task in many cases, right? The whole transition from being one of the people to then having to retool and reset to become the person that is ultimately calling the shots, helping develop them, is a vastly different role. I feel like many leaders find themselves in that because the powers that be will say, look, You're doing a great job. Let's put you in the same role, without thinking about the implications of what that means sort of culturally and for you as the person moving into that role. Can we just go back there a second and just how did you work through that particular step?
Not very well. My first day, I wrote about this in Welcome to Management, but someone who was a prior teammate of mine who was almost 15 years older than me, a woman who was a teammate, but not someone that I was like necessarily close friends mm-hmm. with, just a colleague who you worked with. She knocks on my door, opens it up. I see like her, it looks like she'd been crying. She then shuts the door. She walks into my office and says, Ryan, my husband's cheating on me and he wants a divorce. And I'm 26, 27 and saying, What are you doing? Why are you telling me that? I don't understand this. I don't know what's going on. I'm just trying to crush it at work. I get promoted and now I'm leading the team I was part of. I was number one rep on the team as far as the stack rankings with sales numbers. I tried to, listen, but I was really just thinking, what is she doing? I remember I called my dad after that, and that's when he said, welcome to management. You've got to get to know every single person on your team's personality and understand how to, one, show them that you care for them genuinely. You can't fake that. And then how they work, and then figure out how to get the most out of them, just like Coach Greg and Coach Ollery did for you, right? And so I just didn't think of it that way. As an individual contributor, you really, or at least I should speak for myself, I only thought about myself. Mm-hmm. I thought about like, hey, boss, get out of my way, or clear the path, or get those people who are bothering me throughout the company out of my way so I can just go do my thing. I was thinking it purely from my eyes, whereas as a manager now I had 17 direct reports thinking, oh my goodness, this is way, way different than I thought it would be when I was just a rep. So that's why I also tell people who maybe you haven't elevated to a certain role within a company, be careful mm-hmm. about speaking poorly about them, about bad mouthing. Like, everyone likes to hate on the CEO or the boss. I get it. It's part of like how work works. But pause for a second. You have no idea what they're going through. You have no idea all of the meetings and managing up and sideways and down that they have to do. And so before you criticize, like, maybe you should sit in the seat. And that was me. I was the one criticizing until I was sitting in the seat. And then I was the one probably being criticized because I wasn't doing a very good job. So it just takes a lot of learning. It takes a lot of preparation. I hope tools like my podcast and books can be helpful for that. That's honestly why I wrote Welcome to Management, was because I wrote the book that I wish I'd had before I'd gotten promoted. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the tools I hope people get. Maybe they're on like a high potential trajectory within their company. Hey, you should probably read this before you get promoted. That's my hope for it. So it's hard, man. Like, there's just a million different mistakes that you make, and I'm trying to help people make fewer of them and learn from mine and others' mistakes prior to making them themselves.
Isn't it interesting, right? Like, there is an expectation. And I'll just get back in a quick story we were telling last week on the show. It was about this idea of military service. And when you make the choice to go and serve your country, you essentially, at least in Australia, I think the same is true in the States. Once you choose the service, you have two tracks. You can become an enlisted soldier, airman, sailor, Marine, or you can go to officer training, go to West Point, do the thing. And when I was finishing school, I had the opportunity to make that choice. And I was an Army cadet at school, and I loved it. It was the highlight of my school. Beyond sport, being a cadet was the thing. And my commanding officer was a guy who was a Vietnam veteran, a former Green Beret, very salty kind of guy, but he knew that we knew that he loved us. Like, there was something about the way that he helped us move through our formative years, which was something. And he said to me on graduating, actually before I was filling out the paperwork, he said, learn to follow first. And that's all he said. And he said, find a way to earn the right to be a follower. And I never understood what that was. So I took his advice kind of blindly and I enlisted. I didn't go to officer training like a bunch of my buddies went. And it gave me the chance to understand what it meant to be in a squad, or in our case, a section. and to be part of that small team and to meet the people who were from vastly different backgrounds to what I was. I thought I was quite entitled. I was quite entitled at the time. So that broke that well and truly away. But the interesting thing coming out of that was that now, having, you know, built 8 companies, having led many, many people, I feel like every time I meet someone who's a potential for my team, I have to get to know them in a way which is going to help me make them great. And if I can't do that, then I think I've got bigger problems. We had a guy just before COVID, we were running a biotech firm. We were hiring scientists to come and join us. And we had this guy who I'm sure he won't mind me telling the story. We were doing all the recruiting via Zoom and we were going international for the talent. We found an Australian guy in Germany and we'd done the Zoom calls, we'd done the interviews, we really liked him, we decided to hire him on the cusp of COVID shutting down international travel. And so the fight was on to try and find him to get a flight home. His wife had already come home 3 months before, we had to get him back. And so we took it on ourselves to be on the mission. Now, 3 of us in a company of 10 had met this guy, no one else had. And it became this sort of fight to get him on the aircraft. And when he got in the aircraft, the whole company who had never met him were cheering for this guy to come all the way across. And in the meantime of his flight, we were telling him all that we'd learned about him. By the time he walked in the front door, he was like a piece of the furniture and it was quite overwhelming for him. But we'd learned how to deal with getting to know people in a way that we were deeply invested. And I think that's what you're sort of getting at here.
Yeah, that's a great story. You could think of a boss in your life that maybe you didn't like. I would bet part of the reasoning that you didn't like them was because they didn't make an attempt to truly get to know you and care for you. It's kind of like that basic. It sounds fundamental. It is very simple, but then to actually do it and to show them and make sure they feel it genuinely, you need to work. You need to put in the work to do that. And it's not going to happen automatically if you're not intentional about it, like most important things in life. So it's just about being thoughtful and intentional. And when I think of my favorite bosses, coaches, teachers, leaders, they did that and do that, versus the ones who were my least favorite, they did not do that. They viewed me as maybe a cog in the machine, as a number, as somebody like, hey, just do your job. Like, I get it. We do. When you have a job, you do need to do your job. That's part of it. But if you want to be an exceptional leader, right, and sustain excellence over time, that's some of the extra work you do. You get to know your people. You genuinely care for them. You love on the people that love them. Those types of things are what you do if you're trying to really be a transformational leader. And I hope the type of person that would listen to this show or mine or read the stuff that we put out are the ones who want to be actually transformational, not just transactional and get things done every once in a while.
Yeah, it's a very human thing, right? If you are able to exercise that kind of care with somebody, it will stay with you and it will live well beyond that relationship. I've seen that come back countless times. So I'm completely with you. Man, let's talk quickly about this podcast of yours, which has become a juggernaut in its own right. Like 650 episodes. Felt like it was only yesterday that you hit 500. And I've seen the early footage of your very, very early shows where you were really just showing up, doing a great job, researching well. You taught me in the very beginning that preparation is key. I thought I knew what that meant, but when you get into a game where there's multimedia at play, it takes a next level of planning and preparation to make that work. Can you take us back to some of the early interviews that you had that deeply changed how you think about leadership or even yourself for that matter?
Man, I'll go all the way back to the very, very beginning. I interviewed a guy named Maurice Claret. Americans probably know of him, maybe not as much internationally, but he was a star football player at Ohio State University, won a national championship as a freshman, went into the NFL and had significant troubles with drugs, alcohol, guns, made poor decisions, really poor decisions. And I was before my podcast started, I was a very judgmental person. And I was very judgmental of a guy like Maurice who just made really poor decisions and threw a part of his professional football career. I mean, threw it away, essentially. He admitted that when we spoke. But what I didn't really think about was just the vast differences in our upbringings and how lucky I am for having the parents and brothers that I do to support me, to teach me, to bring me up with love unconditionally, versus Maurice had almost none of that. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse to break the law or make poor decisions. There's no excuse for that. But it did make me view the world with a little more reason, or be more reasonable and realize the world's not so black and white. It's much more gray.
Yeah.
And so instead of being judgmental towards people that maybe have messed up or done things they shouldn't do, I just get more curious now, and I think I try to approach all people that way. It's just, and I know Ted Lasso said it since then, and so I get that that's a thing now, but approaching people with much more curiosity and much less judgment has just been helpful for me. It's made me, I think, a better friend, a better husband, a better dad, hopefully just a better citizen in general, instead of just quickly judging people. And that also happens over time. And I'm sure you're seeing this, Phil, when the more people you interview from more different backgrounds and different life stories, you realize like, oh, wow, there are a lot of different ways to do this thing called life, right?
Yeah.
Like, and we all make different random mistakes, some worse than others. Some break the law. Some do things you should not do. But when you actually like get deep into people's stories and you get curious about them instead of just immediately judging them and like, oh, I don't want to talk to them, or no, that's a bad person. It's like, maybe let's get a little bit more curious. Let's get a little bit more reasonable. Let's be a little less judgmental. I think if we all kind of approach people that way, we would probably be better off. And that's one of the biggest things that these 650 plus conversations, 11 years worth of them, has really, I think, helped me be.
That I think I can't remember who you interviewed that talked to this, but this idea of asking a question as a circuit breaker between stimulus and response to deliver exactly what you just said. Wherever we have this very tied up bias towards, you know, I think I know what's coming, and then you just got to catch yourself and just throw an extra question, usually why, to help sort of understand more. It goes back to this idea of earning the right to know someone. And I just don't think people are thinking about that enough. And we encourage this wholeheartedly. Doing partnerships with other businesses demands a high level of curiosity so that you can actually deliver what you said you were going to do, or at very least have the relationship to be able to pivot when things go sideways, which inevitably they do.
I mean, curiosity in my mind is the ultimate sign of respect and love. It is my top love language. I know it's technically not one of the love languages, but it is for me.
Yeah.
At both giving and receiving. And to me, even just like I think about moments on the side of the soccer field during warmups while my daughter's playing, and just getting to know some of the newer players that have been added to our club this year, just being curious about them. Oh, where'd you come from? Where'd you play last year? Why? And then going a little bit deeper and a little bit deeper. And by the end of the season, you've become friends, just because instead of just showing up and maybe judging or whatever, just asking questions and then listening and then asking follow-up questions and then remembering what they said, so that the next Saturday when you see them, maybe you follow up from that and they do the same. I mean, it's pretty basic. The crazy thing, Phil, I don't know if you see this, is most people don't do this. Most people don't do it. They just don't. To me, Robert Greene said this to me, like, if you genuinely find people's stories fascinating, which I do, and I do even more as each day goes by because I learn more. And then learning begets more learning. Curiosity makes you even more curious. To me, like, that's the juice of life, man. Like, that's what it's all about, is learning about these stories and learning about why people made the decisions they made and what they've learned from mistakes or times that it's gone well. I love learning about those stories. I just think it's really, really interesting. And so why not just ask the question? Why not listen? Why not ask the follow-up question? It makes the other person feel good. And as the person usually asking the questions on my side, like, it's just an enjoyable way to go through life. You know, yeah. It's just a genuinely enjoyable way to do it, as opposed to, you know, just kind of blabbing about your own life all the time. It's just, you know what I mean? So this whole setup with you and me today is not very comfortable for me. I would rather be the one asking the questions. I understand when you go on a podcast as a guest that you should try to stay in your lane and play your role, and I'm trying to do that. But it's much more enjoyable for me and more fun to be the one getting to ask the questions than answer them. So anyway, I'll do it for you because I know like you're good at this, and I want to try to be a good guest, but it's a lot tougher.
Yeah, I feel you. I've been the same. This happened to me twice last week. I know exactly what you mean. On that soccer pitch analogy, so I'm a coach of an under 12 women's team. I've been that for the last 3-4 years. And you know what's interesting about this? There's two friends of mine and I who coach together. And our big thing, because we're fathers of girls, is we would love to see more girls do team sport, pick the sport, whatever it is, to get them through puberty and into, you know, the college years or whatever comes after school, because of all the massive benefit that comes from team sport that you know about, and because of the way that it creates a community. And I really can't help but create community wherever I go. It's something I find exhilarating, and it's based on that curiosity you mentioned. We've had a number of girls that have come from other teams who have joined us. It started really as a school team that was playing club football, and then we sort of moved on. And it's gone from being 100% from the girls of the school to now about 50-50, girls who don't go to the school versus not. And I know there'll be some of the parents of that team listening to this episode. And we have a culture there which is so insanely welcoming of new girls who have not been part of the clique that was the school environment to come and play, that it is, I could say joy. Like, I could use that term for people that understand genuinely what that means, but it is electrifying to see the girls fail in what they believe is not winning on the pitch. You know, score count doesn't go their way, and how they recover, and how they act, and how they do show up when they win, because it is such a level of self-reinforcing goodness that you can just see from the sideline. My manager and I are going completely nuts on the sideline out of complete happiness for what they're achieving. And at the end of the season, there is such a void, right? When you sort of go, well, that was fantastic. You might get your weekends back, but it takes me a good 5 or 6 weekends to sort of shake the feeling of wanting to be there with them to sort of have that kind of experience. And the feedback that we get from that is we are absolutely delivering on our commitment, which is to have the girls enjoy playing a team sport. And it really just comes down to that curiosity, right? Like, because they are getting so much out of this, but the parents, I feel, are getting probably a little bit more out of this than their girls are.
Why is that? Why were the parents getting more than the girls?
I think they hope that when they send their girls to a team, to a sport, that they're going to genuinely have a great time playing the sport. And at this age, you know, our girls are, you know, age 10 and 12, they get, fortunately, the ability to go and try a whole bunch of different sports just to see if something sticks. And you hope, and I'm not sure what it's like in your household, but we've had many conversations with, yeah, I tried it, didn't love it. And my wife and I were secretly hoping that they would love that sport because it's a great sport, but it didn't really stick. But then you end up in a circumstance where they just, you know, they are ready and packed and ready to go like an hour before practice. They are organized. They are, and all the girls are like this. They are ready to get to training. They want to be there. They want to build that out as a leadership contribution that they don't know is happening right now, but they're so excited to be part of that, that they just can't wait to play. And they get very frustrated when they're on the sideline as a sub. Their first question as soon as they come off is, when do I get to go back on again? And it's one of those things that I just, you know, I hope that more parents are doing this and more parents are seeing it. But it does come down to wanting to be deeply curious, because I don't think we're anything special from coaches. We're not paid coaches for this kind of stuff. We are people that we're hoping we're doing the right kind of work. and curious enough to have all the girls come and have a great time.
Team sports, man. I'm very biased. It was my whole life growing up. It paid for my college, you know, created opportunities for me after college. But now as a dad of daughters who are playing sports, to me, I just think it is an amazing place for them to have so many experiences that we cannot create for them as parents. So a few of them would be learning to be a great teammate. Right, you're going to need that skill when you grow up beyond college. You're probably going to work with other people, and you're not going to love all of them, but you need to be a great teammate. So what does that look like? Helping somebody up, celebrating them, being there for them when they struggle, right? Be a great teammate. Be an energy additive person, right? Have enthusiasm. Be a hard worker. Show up with a positive attitude. All of that means being a great teammate. Another one would be responding to adversity. For example, one of my high school daughters, Ella, plays volleyball. And even when you win a set in volleyball, sometimes you can lose 23 of those points. You play to 25, you got to win by two. So there are sets they've won 25 to 23. That means in just that one set, and you got to win three sets to win a match, in just that one set, she and her teammates collectively, and they huddle after every point, have had to respond to failure, losing the point, 23 times. Mm-hmm. Think about that. We can't create that environment any other way at our house. We can't create 23 losses. And sometimes that happens multiple sets within a match. And there's 20 some matches per year or more. So to me, like, I love the idea of being a great teammate. I love the idea of responding to adversity. I think team sports, not every kid is athletic enough to make their high school whatever team or the club team. I get it. Hopefully you can experience sports at whatever level or whatever competitiveness, just to experience some of what it's like to be a part of a team, to respond to losing, to being there together, to going out to the, we went yesterday, you know, I played a big game about 2.5 hours away in Louisville, Kentucky. I live in Ohio. And afterwards, we're celebrating a big win together against a team that had previously beat us by going out to a meal. Like, those things are the best, man. Like, both for us with the parents, the girls all together. So I think, to me, I think about those moments, and I hope more and more people can experience them. And yes, we're kind of lucky that some of our girls have showed the aptitude to be good, but I mean, even if you're just even a little bit good enough, I hope you go out there and give it a go, because there's so much upside you can benefit from.
Massive upside. So speaking of which, let's talk about standards, because one of the things that you and your co-author Brooke Cups mention a lot in your most recent book is this idea of standards, its importance to the thing you can control. And it guides how you show up and what it means to be intentional, particularly when the world could be in not great shape from what you're seeing and hearing. There is still that element of what you can control to show up with. So what personal habits and maybe frameworks do you use to consistently show up at the level that has allowed you to get to where you are today?
Show up to the level of like being a high standard person? I think about, so Brooke and I write about our, like, defining your purpose statement. And to me, Brooke helped me a ton with this. And so my purpose is to inspire others to value and pursue excellence. And I enunciate the word value and put it in big, bold letters when I share this, like, on a screen. What I mean by that, I need to live in a way that inspires others to have higher standards. I think too many people in the world are okay with mediocrity. I just do. If you look around, too many people are okay to give 60 to 70% effort for things. Literally, if you look around in everything that's happening, almost everyone are okay to just do okay. And I hope that if you see anything that I try to do, host a podcast, write a book, be a guest on a podcast, be the PA announcer for the high school volleyball team, which I am, no matter what the thing is that I'm going to do, I'm going to give maximum effort, because I kind of want people to say, that dude's a little crazy with how serious he takes that PA announcing job for a high school volleyball team. And that's been said multiple times. That dude's a little nuts. Like, why did he buy a new amp and a new microphone and has new music set up so that it all – well, because I believe in excellence. Mm-hmm. And I believe if you're going to do anything, then you do it, right? Or don't, which is fine because you can't do everything. And so I think it's a mentality. It's a way to go through life. Like, if you're going to do it, then do it. But this whole 60 to 70% thing, I can't do that. I'm not into that. I don't want to work with people who are okay with that. And I think in order to inspire others to value and pursue excellence, it's either I'm going to commit or I'm not. Ed Lattimore came to our growth summit this year as a surprise guest. Awesome dude. And he used a phrase that I have now adopted, and Ed knows this, but he goes, when he studied people who have really put a positive dent in the world, when he's been around them and what he tries to do, you know, one phrase he uses, he goes, they don't dabble. They don't dabble. They either commit or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So to me, if someone says, oh, yeah, he dabbles with a lot of stuff, he just kind of dabbles, that is not a compliment, man. I want him to say, like, actually, that guy's a little overboard. Mm-hmm. With how he does that. Little, like, he seems a little nuts with how serious or how hard he goes at whatever it is, or cares about the tiniest of details with the show notes artwork when I send notes back to the designer saying, tweak this. They're like, you can't even notice. I can notice.
Mm-hmm.
I can notice.
Yeah.
Those little edits to the podcast, like, sometimes it's like a clearing of your throat. Hey, can you edit that out at 54, 31, 26? What? The second down to the 10th? Yes. Can you just edit that little part? Okay. And now they're used to it. They worked for a while. So I just think, like, to me, and you get me kind of going on this stuff, I just think it's worth it. If you're going to do it, then do it. And if not, that is completely fine. Just don't do it. But don't 60% things. Don't 70% things. Go 100 or zero. I'm just a believer in either commit to the thing or don't.
That I think one of the things that you've taught me is also just to remind yourself of the need to be excellent. And, you know, James Clear, Atomic Habits, he's famous for saying many things. One of them was the heaviest weight at the gym is the front door. Right, just getting there when you don't want to show up, when you don't want to be doing the thing. I remind myself in those moments, and they seem to be getting fewer and fewer as I get older, just be excellent. You committed to doing it. You won't always want to be doing it every single time, but every rep counts. And the reality is, if you aspire to excellence, there's a good chance you'll get there. It might not feel like that in the moment, but just to remind yourself for that to be the case. It's what we actually teach the girls when they're down on the pitch. If there's one thing that you need to do is just to physically reset, tap yourself on the shoulder. I think I got that from you boys as well. Just say to yourself, just be excellent. Just remind yourself that you're capable of doing it. And more often than not, that'll be the thing that will shake you out of a funk you might be in, because you have committed and because there will be that kind of trough that you have to go through, which is the natural progression of doing something that really matters.
A simple prompt for that too is, am I giving my maximum effort to this thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't, as a dad, I cannot ask for anything more than that. You show up with a good attitude, great attitude. Did you give your maximum effort? That's all you can really do. That's all what's within your control. I hope you win because it feels good. It's fun to win. Don't get me wrong. We like to win. But did you give your maximum effort to whatever the thing is that you're doing? I said that right before, honestly, joining the Riverside with you here, Phil, was, okay, it is my in order to live in accordance with my values, I need to give my maximum effort and enthusiasm while I'm with you. Or if I'm not able to do that today, then I would say, hey, man, I hate to do this, but I got to cancel or reschedule. It's either give maximum effort, bring the juice, be ready to go, try to leave Phil better than you found him, right? Or don't do it. And I hope that doesn't just lead people to not do anything, right? Because, like, that's not a good thing either. But I just think just have little simple prompts for yourself before you walk into the room, before you do whatever the thing is you're going to do. Okay, I can control my attitude here. Let's go. Be positive, optimistic, bring the enthusiasm. I can control my effort here. Am I going to give maximum effort to this thing? and then do that. And then whatever happens, happens after that. You can't really fully control everything, but I can control those things. So I'm trying my best, both living it that way, as well as then when I'm acting as a dad, as a coach, as a teacher, as a facilitator, whatever it is I'm doing, let me give everything I have to this thing.
If you were to, for somebody who has not listened to your show before, if they went to any episode and press play, like literally just scrolled through, blindfolded, press play on any episode, as soon as they heard your introduction, they would know the kind of energy that is there. And then they would listen all the way through and get to the end of the show club, I think you call it.
Yeah, the podcast club, yeah.
And the podcast club, where you sort of do a summary and you sort of get it there. It's very difficult not to see that's how you do that. So let me just ask you this. Podcasting is crowded, and we're going to get to partnerships in a second, but podcasting is a crowded medium. You have navigated all the way through that. And the guests that you speak to, and obviously this is a hard recommend for this show, but you speak to some of the world's foremost thinkers in psychology, business, sport, and I'm always in anticipation of who's going to come next. What's your criteria for having someone on your show to be able to maintain that level of interest over time? Because the curiosity is obvious, their skill set, their experience is obvious. But you've done this 650 times, my friend. Like, what is the way that you think about getting a guest on the show for your team?
Does the combination of the person, their story, their expertise, and their storytelling ability pique my curiosity enough to do anywhere from 6 to 15 hours worth of research by myself, reading, watching videos, creating an outline? Does that happen? And if so, then yeah, let's do it. Let's prepare and let's do the episode. The thing that I don't necessarily share as much publicly, but you and I may have talked about privately, I'm not exactly sure, is, you know, I still probably don't publish maybe 25% of the recordings that we do. So
yep,
sometimes, you know, it devastates me when that happens, but it happens, you know, like 1 out of 4 almost.
Mm.
And that's usually because I didn't prep enough, or a combination of me and the guest just weren't good enough. So the standard, we try to continue to raise that standard. And that's a question I ask of the editors I have helping me with the show, is this, does this meet the standard? I'm not sure. And usually if I'm not sure, that means it's a no,
because
usually you know. But yeah, so it's a combination of, are they an interesting enough person who are accomplished, subject matter experts, great storytellers, great communicators, plus am I curious enough about them to want to do all of the prep work, which will then enable me to do a good job once we actually record. So that bar just continually rises. I'm trying to keep pushing it. As we talked about prior to recording, the kind of guest selection process has changed and evolved over time, whereas the first 100+ was almost all me cold outreaching for them. And now that's flipped almost completely. I still cold outreach from time to time, but a lot of them, I have relationships with PR people and others and friends of guests and things like that, where they're referring them to come on without me asking, things like that. So it's flipped a little bit. It's made it easier. I can be a lot pickier on who comes on the show, but for the most part, I still have to have that curiosity level about them to want to do all of the prep to make sure that it's a good one. And even after that, I still miss, I don't know, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 4 times.
It's interesting, isn't it? We have a similar ratio to that, which is disappointing. And I think the preparation, the curiosity is essential. You want to have a great conversation, right? Because you know, like, you will never know who is listening. I never know. Obviously, we never know this. We have some data, but not highly personalized stuff. And it is something about having an individual, or just believing that you will affect someone's life very positively that you'll never know, is something that drives me a lot to do this work. that ripple effect that does get created from time to time, that may on the odd occasion, maybe one in 20 times, it finds its way back to you, is very gratifying. But the belief that the curiosity plus the intention will deliver something material for people very consistently for me is really the reason why we keep doing this. So I appreciate that very, very much. You know, when we talk about the books that have been written, they've been written over a good chunk of time. And when people, when you say, look, I've written this book, Welcome to Management, for example, that was relatively early on in the Ryan Hawke empire step, and then you moved on to the next couple of books. What have they done for you beyond crystallize your thinking?
That's the most important thing they've done for me. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you recognize that is writing is the best way to clarify your thinking, and great leaders are very clear thinkers. So that's good. Book projects are necessary for me to really try to tackle challenging subjects and become wiser about them. They make me a much better speaker, a much better communicator. They also force commitment when you bring other people into the party. I mean, all three of them are with professional publishing houses where you sign book deals. And then, you know, you have deadlines and I like hitting deadlines. So I think that's a good thing because that follows through on my commitment to somebody else. And then they it's just another medium to get your work out into the world, because there's still, even though podcasts seem like they're everywhere and everybody has them and it's crowded, there's still a lot of people who just don't regularly listen to podcasts, but they still read books or listen to books. So to me, it's just another avenue to get my message out, in addition to the selfish act of being a clarifier of my thoughts, of making me a clearer thinker by getting the thoughts, those fuzzy thoughts in my head, onto the page, which then they become much, much clearer. So yeah, and then on top of that, like if you want to talk from a business perspective, it is a credibility thing still in this world to be an author. And that wasn't necessarily why I did it at the beginning, but I would say that I have benefited from that credibility. I don't need to do it for that anymore. I'll continue to do it because of the first part you mentioned, because it really makes me a much clearer thinker and a better communicator.
Would you say that have led to more meaningful partnerships in business for you?
Yeah, I would say so. Just again, because of the credibility that it brings. And you have noted, you bring up the Pursuit of Excellence saying it was your favorite. I have not done any airport campaigns. So basically most of the books that are in airports are paid placement, and it's quite an investment. And so I haven't done them, but sometimes airports will pick up books. And so that's happened with actually the Pursuit of Excellence, which is funny. And a guy who runs a company was in an airport. He saw on the back, it said, "You've never arrived, you're always becoming." And he loved that. And so he bought it. He tore through it in the weekend. And he brings me in. I'm still doing work with this company. It's been like, three years now?
You just never know, right? You never know.
So you just don't know. Yeah. You don't know. What you end up doing when you have the guts to publish your thoughts, whether it's a podcast or a book or whatever, is you're creating a potential magnetic effect to bring people to you. You're creating something that could bring people to you. And I didn't necessarily even think of it that way at the beginning. I do know it's a thing now, but yeah, from a partnership perspective, putting your thoughts out into the world for all to judge and maybe laugh at can have an infinite upside if you're willing to go through the potential embarrassment of people laughing at you. And so, but to me, it's like, whatever, who cares? Like if that happens, it happens. To me, I'd rather think about the upside and getting my thoughts out there and attracting people to me that are growth focused and ambitious and want to put a positive dent in the world. Let's go for more of that. And if it happens, then, you know, I'll do my best to make the most of each of those opportunities and not really think that much about the potential downside.
So let's just harbor on that for a second, because the ability to attract people who are really looking to make that dent, I fundamentally believe they live everywhere, whether they've been given the chance or not to see that in their own, in themselves, is a different story. And one of the things that you do very successfully is what the world will refer to as leadership circles. And this is where you bring together fantastic leaders in a structured kind of cohort-based environment. And one of the things I'm most interested in and hope to participate in one day is how you bring people together internationally once a year to have that in-person experience, which, let's all be honest, in real life events, you just can't replicate the magic that can come from them. Can you tell us a bit about these circles, where they came from, and why they're so fundamental to, I guess, galvanizing everything that you talk about, everything that gets discussed, so that people can have that ripple effect or that kind of experience of being able to bring their leadership to the surface?
It's probably similar to what you have experienced and continue to experience. Is over time, you get emails from people who listen to your show, or they talk to you when they see you in person, where they want to meet others who are into your show as well. And so that was happening in the early days. And one of my friends and mentors, Greg Meredith, I was showing him some of these emails, and he said, "Hey, I'm actually a part of this mastermind group with other people who are small business owners, as he is. And it's changed my life. It's amazing getting together with these group of people who are other business owners. You should create like a circle of these types of people." And that was the original idea in 2017, going into 2018. He said, "It's really important though to make it application based, and you do need to have a vetting process. So it's not just like whoever signs up is in. Because you do want to make sure they're kind of they have high character, highly competent, love seeing other people do well, right? Have some of the giving mindset, so that when they show up to the meetings, they're trying to add value and give to others." So I did do that, and I launched it then in 2018, and got super lucky that the first group was amazing, because I'm still together with most of them to this day. You know, now what, 8 years later?
Yeah.
So it's pretty wild to see that those people have renewed in some cases 6-7 times. And I run new groups every year. The caliber of people just continues to blow my mind, of the things that they've accomplished and are striving towards, the character, the families that I'm seeing, the connection. And then you mentioned the in-person, which we do once a year for about 3 days. And you know, a random part of the United States. This past year, we went to Scottsdale, Arizona, primarily because I wanted to hike mountains together as a group, which we went on a few hikes. But I think you got to get people shoulder to shoulder, learning together, eating together, hiking together, doing workouts together, doing improv together, laughing together. Like we really orchestrate and think about the experience from the second they get to the place where we're at, to the second that they get on that airplane, is what can we do to make sure this is an experience where we create a collision of curious people that then we hope they can build relationships and or friendships for life. And so everything's very intentional. The seating charts, where we go to dinner, what we eat, like everything, to think about like, how can I try to manufacture or at least help catalyze these relationships to be life-changing and lasting for a very, very long time. And to me, one of the, again, most gratifying things is when I get like a text from two people, and it's somebody who's traveling to somebody else's city for work for a random reason. And instead of staying in a hotel, they're at the dinner table with that person's family, staying in their spare bedroom. Mm-hmm. That type of stuff is the best. And so knowing that those two people would not have met if not for our circles, and now they've built and developed lifelong friendships beyond me, is the best. So I love that stuff. I'm glad that Greg kind of pushed me to do it, and now we've done it for a long time, and it's the coolest thing ever, man.
That is awesome. A collision of curious people like that. That's so good, so very good. Just terrific stuff. Listen, we are talking right now. Today is the 7th of October, 2025, 6th for you. The next question I have for you relates to your earlier time in sales. This is a time where the the end of year quarter is always a tricky one for people, particularly in our world where it's sales, business development, trying to close out the quarter well. Australia classically shuts down pretty hard for its summer vacation at the end of the Christmas time, end of December, for most of January. It's very different in different parts of the world. But I want to go back to your early B2B sales experience. And, you know, when you think about the way that sales helped inform what you do today and the way that you form partnerships, how would you characterize that for people who are listening to this right now? They might be senior sales folks going, look, the world is tough right now. There's a lot of things we're trying to do. It's not a lot might be working. What advice could you give them about where you came from in sales to where it goes to now around partnerships and relationship development when you're under pressure? Sales,
I learned most of this from my dad, but sales is one of the most noble professions in the world. The entire world is built because of sales professionals. Mm-hmm. The economy of the world would come to a screeching halt if salespeople, sales professionals did not exist. You literally make the economy go. And whether you have a quota or carry a bag, you work in sales every day. As Dan Pink has said for many years, we are all in sales at all times. So to me, like, if I try to simplify it as much as possible, what sales is me having a conversation with someone else, trying to better understand their current state and their desired state, and hopefully my solution can solve that problem and create a bridge from a current state and a desired state. And you usually learn those two states, current and desired, through being great at asking questions, at being really curious, at being a good listener, and about actually caring. Because sometimes the solution that I have to provide you will not be the correct solution for you. Mm. And when that's the case, you have to be honest. And you got to say, this actually is not going to work, or this is not going to be a good fit here. That's okay. We learned, and you move on. You got to maintain credibility. You got to be honest. Everyone has had a bad experience with a bad sales professional. That doesn't mean the whole industry is bad or sleazy or slimy. That just means you had a bad experience with a bad sales professional. That's life. There are bad people at literally every single job in the world. That doesn't mean because you had a bad experience with a doctor who wasn't good or thoughtful that all doctors are bad. It just means that one was. But for whatever reason, because you've had a bad experience buying a car or something like that, you just think all salespeople are bad. That just isn't true, man. Like, you know them just as well as I do. Some of the most impressive people in the world are amazing sales professionals because they're great listeners, because they're great in the discovery phase, because they're great at understanding if their solution helps solve your problem. And so that's what I tell people. That's really what you are, is you're a problem solver. You're not going to solve everyone's problem, but there probably are a lot of people that you can. And your job is to listen, ask questions, listen some more, ask follow-up questions, listen, and then figure out if your solution helps solve their problem. And hopefully it does, and then hopefully you can implement that. So that's really what you're striving to do. That's why I try to do my business now. You know, I'm the only one in my business now that is really the kind of the sales engine of it. But really, it's just about thinking of where people are at, where they're trying to go, and can we provide them with something to help them get there? And hopefully we can. We can't with everybody, that's for sure. And when we can't, I just tell them, honestly, this is probably not a good fit, you know, but when it is, I tell them, honestly, this is a good fit. Let's go. And, you know, usually I think they can tell that comes from a credible source, and I'm trying my best to be real and honest. And when we can, then we go out and implement and hopefully deliver for them. So, sales is everything. It's really, really important. It needs to be done well though. And when it is, it's beautiful. It doesn't feel like sales at all. It just feels like a conversation and two people trying to solve a problem.
I love that. I love it. And we're going to talk about it in a second, because we are going to very quickly run out of time for our hour today. I could talk to you for such a long time, but where are we going to send people to learn more about you? What's the best place? We'll put this in the show notes, but where should I direct people to learn more about you, my friend?
learningleader.com. That's the home base for everything, just learningleader.com.
Excellent. Well, people, you should check that out, particularly the podcast. Start there. You will never walk away from an episode without learning something great. Mate, we've talked a lot about showing up over the long term. And one of the things that I think is difficult in the moment for a lot of people, particularly when they're under pressure and they're stressed, their aperture for perspective closes. And being able to take a step back and breathe a little bit and work out, how can I be here and show up to play a great long game, knowing that it won't always be great, is life, right? And we only get one shot at this, so this is no rehearsal. Can you share an example where a partnership or a relationship took a long time to cultivate, but turned out to be something really significant? Maybe not a familial one, obviously, because that's something that we work on most days, but relationships for you seem to be a very, very big part of your world. What was one of those that turned out to be something really, really significant that took some time to cultivate?
I was going to say the one with my wife. It's the greatest relationship in the world. Sure. for me.
Same.
But it didn't start that way, mainly because of me, because I was young and stupid. But besides that, I mean, honestly, though, that was the first thing I thought of when you said it, because it was a younger guy being an idiot with a much more intelligent woman who knew this was the right thing, and the guy didn't. And then eventually we got there, right?
Yeah, my wife is nodding right now. She's nodding and just smiling at people.
The idiot that I was?
Yeah, for sure. 100%, of course.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I want to ask you to go to details. But anyway, it's probably maybe it's more common than I realize. But I think in general, consistency is the number one way to build trust with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Consistently doing what you say you're going to do, consistently showing up every day, whether it's sports or it's relationships or it's partnerships, when they know you're going to show up and do what you're supposed to do and do what you said you're going to do, that's how trust is formed. When you talk about like these parasocial relationships that we form with our podcast listeners, Phil, that I think is the biggest one for me. For 11 years, every Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, my podcast has come out. No misses, no excuses. Through COVID, traveling, sickness, death, nothing. No misses. That's consistency. So whatever the relationship or partnership you're trying to build, be consistent. Show up for them. Keep going. You cannot win the game if you don't stay in the game, right? Instead of trying to win with brilliance or intensity, win with endurance. Be willing to keep going through all of the crazy hard stuff that will be thrown your way, or the bumps in the road, the roller coaster, whatever, right? Instead of thinking like, I'm going to be brilliant. I don't know if I have the skill to be brilliant, but I do have the skill and I can work at enduring. So endurance can be the way to win. So to me, you got to keep showing up, be consistent, endure through all of that stuff, keep at it. Give yourself a chance to win the game by staying in the game. Too many people quit. So don't quit. You got to keep going. And most people do, though. They do. They can't be consistent. They can't continue to follow through. They can do it for a little bit of time. They get really, really excited, and they go for a little bit, and then you just stop hearing from them. Just be the one to keep going through all that stuff, even when it gets really, really hard, especially when it gets really, really hard. Be able to endure through it. And I like your chances of then forming good partnerships, good relationships when a lot of others might struggle through that.
So good. So good. Now, listen, I have the classic 5-question rapid fire to get to you. Before I do, my last question to you is this. You and I both know how important partnership is in getting things done in life. Like there is no way to go alone in this world, whether it's in business, in a personal life, in a sporting team. What do you think leaders right now are missing about the power of partnerships?
I mean, all of life, all of things that have gone well usually happens through people, through others. So partnerships, relationships, when I think about like the coolest opportunities in my life, all of them have come through people, all of them. And so however you think about that, realizing that all of life is about building great relationships and adding value to people's lives without expecting anything back. The crazy thing is when you show up to add value to people's lives without any expectation, there's no like mutual reciprocity, no, like none of that nonsense, right? You show up thinking, what can I do to add value to that person's life without thinking of anything else? You just get a ton in return, maybe from them, maybe not, but just from like the world. It is wild how that math works when you show up thinking, what can I give? How can I add value? And you just consistently, again, do that day after day after day. You end up getting probably more than you can even handle in return from a wide variety of sources if that's your intention. If your intention is, all right, I think I'll do this thing for that person because I hope that they'll do this bigger thing for me. If that's your style from a partnership, you will lose. You will fail. Everyone knows those types of people at the networking events. We don't want to work with those people. We like working with people who love to give, who love to add value. And you get into relationships with those types of people, it just seems like there's more than enough for everybody to go around. It's really cool how it seems to work.
And that's exactly how it works. So I hope as you're listening to this or watching this, that you've had an experience like that. If you have not yet, and you continue to put out value and to go first in with no expectation of return, keep doing it. It will happen. And like most things, it feels like it's not happening until it happens all at once. So please keep doing that. Ryan, let's get into this rapid fire five. Now I asked you the same set of questions the first time we caught up. Let's see how we go in the second set. So question number one, complete this sentence. Partnership is
adding value to other people's lives.
Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything.
Dan Coyle's new book is called Flourishing. And yes. It is
excellent.
I love Dan Coyle as a human. I've had a few meals with him one-on-one. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most kind, caring, giving people and a brilliant genius writer, an amazing storyteller. So Dan Coyle's work.
Awesome. What's the worst piece of advice you received and why?
Worst piece of advice. What did I say last time? Do you remember? I don't remember. I don't know. I don't want to just say something trite that's not honest here. I'm trying to think of like, I don't have a worst piece of advice. Maybe I've done a good job of forgetting it. I don't have a good answer here, and I don't want to make it up because that's being disrespectful. So let me think about that and follow up.
All right. That sounds good. The next question. So when you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
I will try to add some sort of value to their life. I will try to give and not ask for anything in return. If I can add value to somebody's life, then again, I'm trying to consistently do that with every relationship. And usually things have a weird way of working themselves out, not necessarily with them, but probably with somebody.
Yeah. And final question, what's one thing or maybe two things you're deeply grateful for right now?
My family, my wife, Miranda. I have a healthy, vibrant, loving family. Like last night, watching a movie together with teenage girls, our 11-year-old laying down on the couch, all the Jerry Best. Seinfeld kind of garbage time. I mean, yeah. I don't know if there's anything better. I like skiing vacations with them too. Don't get me wrong. That's fun, sitting on the lifts together. But also the garbage time in between all of the big moments is probably as good as it gets.
You know, I don't know how this came into our world, but Modern Family has piqued the girls' interest. And so now we have Modern Family nights. And because they're old enough now to get the humor and to get the timing, we will sit there in just roaring laughter. And it's one of the best times of the day and the night.
Those awesome little traditions, man, like you don't know necessarily what they're going to be. You can try to orchestrate them and sometimes it works, but to me, there's nothing better. That's the juice, right? It's just the moments, those things you can share. We watch the show High Potential, which it doesn't matter what the show is, but like random stuff like that, being together, doing things together, sharing meals, laying on the couch together, like all the little things, doing hard things together too, but all the little stuff, that's the best. That's
creating the best. Memories, my friend, creating memories. Yeah. That's yeah. it. Ryan Hawk, as always, such a pleasure to see you, man. We will let everybody know once this is out, and I am super keen for our next conversation. Thanks for being here.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes-Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.